Welcome, everyone. Welcome for the second time today to Contact Lost, the Polish English-speaking Warhammer 40k podcast, or competitive Warhammer 40k podcast. You've probably heard this so many times in the most recent days that soon you'll be able to introduce our podcast better than I do. But still, I need to do it. So I am Tweak, your usual host, and today we are doing another part of the LGT's Lucky Seven, or the London Grand Tournament Lucky Seven. This is a series that we do to highlight the fact that the London Grand Tournament is happening this year for the seventh time. So it's going to be the seventh edition of the show. And the formula of the show is as follows. I pitch a certain idea for a top seven to my potential guests, and the guests either choose something from the list that I provide or choose a topic that they prefer to talk about. And today is very much the case of just that. So with me today, I have one of the, and now let's see if I failed to pronounce it or not, one of the Unconquerables. Yes, I made it. John Swallow. Hi, dude.
You're right, Paul. Thank you for having me on.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to have you. So I brought in John because I think the Unconquerables are a group that deserve the biggest highlight. The group that probably out of the... let's start from the beginning. Zach, so the organizer of the LGT, is organizing not one, but actually two tournaments in one. The first one is going to be the Invitational that takes place on Friday. And then the final is going to be played on another day. And then the main event that starts on Saturday and the final will be played on Monday. The Invitational takes part on Friday and it consists of like three subgroups. So there are going to be the pros. Don't mistake them with like actual pros. So pros in the Invitational are people who do something semi-professionally around 40k. So people who have a podcast, like myself. I'm not a pro player. I just have a podcast. So, you know, don't have high hopes. But yeah, there is Manny Chima from Glasshammer, Innes Wilson from StatCheck, David Gaylard from Fireside Podcast, and so on and so on. So as you can clearly see, people with some podcasting or social media background. Then there are the amateurs, or AMs, who definitely are not amateurs. They are the most skilled players probably at the event. So, you know, Nassim, whoever is there, Josh Roberts probably, and some other people from like the very, very top. And then we have the Unconquerables. And I'll let John explain who the Unconquerables are and how does one join that esteemed group of people. So, John, the mic is yours.
So Unconquerables, the answer's in the name. They have been unconquerable for a super major, one of Zach's big events. So we must have gone 5-0. We must have won all our games and then made it to the final cut. Or not even made it to the final cut, but just win all your games during that day. And I do think it's great what Zach's done to try and give that limelight and shine it on to people who, you know, going 5-0 at any tournament is tricky. And not making that top cut or just struggling to get that first, second, third place where, you know, the accolades kind of stick to. It's a tricky one. So it's nice that this has come around to push that in. So to become unconquerable, you have to win all your games at one of Zach's events. And I mean, we could answer the question really easily and go, well, how to become an unconquerable? Pick an army, you go and you don't lose. It's as easy as that. To quote Manny, just roll sixes and just get those wins.
Yep, he definitely has the know-how, but I don't think everyone is able to do that. I know that I am not able to do that. So how did you get there? Which was the event that you managed to become unconquerable? And then, you know, what did you play? How did it go? Tell us all about it.
Right, well, this is where I lose all the credit, the three credit, because I went to the lead super major, and I went 5-0, and I was lucky enough to make the cut, and then won my semi-final game. But lost to Josh Roberts in the final. And I was taking Eldar of 10th edition back in the early days when Eldar were really, really good. So I could say that I analysed the game and I got my tactics down perfect, but the army was simply extremely good. And I think you need a lot of that. I think we talk a lot about S tier and A tier and we level out these armies, I think if you don't have that toolbox, if you don't have that setup, behind your maths, behind the tactics within the game, then you will struggle to go 5-0 Super Majors. I mean, these lists do come out of left field. I know Innes Wilson, he creates some fantastic army lists and comes up with quite innovative different ways. Same with Vic Vijay. You know, some of the things he comes up with are always amazing. So to see those come up through the ranks and not be a net list, so to speak, mm-hmm. Great to see. However, having that Elder Army in my pocket whilst playing those games was fantastic help. But then to give myself some credit, I've been playing Warhammer for many, many years. I think I started taking it seriously, enjoying the game back in 5th edition. And ever since then, I've been an avid player. Can't say I've been the most competitive and getting the reps in week after week. But I'd always go to a few tournaments, always go to some events. And, you know, mine and my friends, you know, main aim when going were to beat the main names at the time, were to beat those net lists and just see what we could do to the few events that we got onto. So over the years, 5th edition, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, all the way up to 10th, just playing the game, understanding the game, getting the maths mechanics, putting all those little bits of, you know, tools into your toolbox to be able to, you know, when you get to that level of the game, use as you need to with a great army or with an innovative army that you've built up. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, to answer the question simply, go win all your games. But I think the long and more accurate answer is build up that skill set and develop your game to a level where you are confident playing into the majority of people, the majority of armies, and you know the rules that you know your army well, so you can act accordingly.
Yeah, so when you say you know your army well, I understand that Eldar is your cup of tea, so to say. So it's not like you've picked them up right now, it's something that you've had experience with for a bunch of years, right?
Yeah, I might have the odd point or two of Eldar models knocking on the house in places. So yeah, no, I do have a good collection. I think I made the decision around 7th and 8th because I had like a bit of a Tau army. I had some Necrons around. But then, I don't know, my heart and head was kind of lining Eldar and Dark Eldar. So I decided then I'm going to build up my collection to be really quite, well, just all Dark Eldar and Eldar, so that regardless how editions changed or Codex has changed or indexes and, you know, all the things Games Workshop are doing to balance the books, I could just pick the best I could get from those armies.
All right. Okay. So it was Leeds, right? That you you managed to come unconquerable. All right. What's the ambition for the Invitational and for the LGT? So I understand that you went to the LGT last year as well. And probably you have appetite for some more this year. But again, what's your ambition for the tournament? You're playing a very strong army. Do you think you can again become or confirm that you are the unconquerable or even go higher? What do you think?
I will try my best. I think, that's really hard putting you on the spot with this one for the ambition of how I'm going to go. I mean, playing the Necron army by a recent gaming group that I play with, you know, they've been trying to get the reps in with me, but I've not had the practice that I've had with the Eldar. So if anything, just my knowledge and understanding and playing that game a bit more precisely refined that I have been in current edition or in current tournaments, I just need to be more pinpoint with that. So my ambition is to pretty much win as many games as I can, have fun along the way. I probably want a 4-1. If I got a 3-2, I would be disappointed, I can't lie. However, going 5-0, I think I'd need a nice run. As a Goonhammer like to point out, I do have some quite easy runs sometimes. I might have a well favourable matchups, and I think I'd need the same again for armies that may have not ticked into the Necrons that I've got ready. So if that happens, which, you know, the LGT is the easiest one to do it in, you've got that many players, you could avoid all those killer lists and killer players and just have a bit of a more steady running, and the army can do that. So I couldn't see why not. But again, I could bump into a couple of armies that are totally tech to deal with it. So I'd drop down to a 3-2, 4-1, which, you know, I wouldn't be surprised at. As far as the Invitational, very similar. However, the Invitational is a completely different kettle of fish to the LGT because you don't have like 800-900 players to go around. You know that every game is going to be a good game and great players. So I will just take that as it comes. I will take it game per game. It's the first time of doing it. So I'm just going to have fun. I'm just going to enjoy it. We'll try my best.
So I have in my mind a question from one of our listeners. I think it was a question from our patron Dick, who directed that question at Nassim, but I think it's a question that is appropriate in here as well. You said that you are going to be playing Necrons, and mm-hmm. in his Dick is also like he's from the Dutch national team.
I know Dick well. Me and Dick are friends.
Right. So he's also a Necron player. And one of the questions that he asked was, like, do you think that people are going to be gearing specifically against Necrons, and that actually Necrons are going to have a harder time at this event just because people are preparing to either be able to tackle, you know, 20-man Necron bricks or 10-man Lich Guard bricks? And again, is there anything that you're doing to sort of counter that thinking and that preparation to be able to tackle that?
I mean, Dick's really good at Necrons. He knows the game, he knows the meta. And yeah, people will be. I know my friends are, they're always talking about this unkillable brick and how to work around it. I know my team that I'm going out to ITT tournament with, they're doing the same. So they are all thinking, well, how do I kill this 20 brick? And kind of thinking about every other army afterwards. But again, they're the kind of players that are like, what's going to be in this show today? They are preparing heavily for the LGT. They know the current meta. They've understood the new data slate quickly, so therefore adapting to it. So regardless of what I was taking, I mean, I would love to be taking my Eldar again, but since the change and different workarounds with that, I've just jumped ship onto the Necrons. I think regardless of what was being taken, those options of what are the meta, what could the meta mainly be, and then the counters to it, yeah, they're going to be there. As far as me countering the counter goes, I'm just hoping I don't really bump into those killers. Those people who've got the bricks. It's the worst strategy ever. And I've got some ideas. I've got some ways of working around. And the army from my playtesting is very much a tape-measure army. It's a movement game army. Every other phase, I'm not really bothered about when playing that game. And if someone does make a mistake against me, if people shoot in the wrong way, then... You know, I will try and capitalize on that and use my reanimations, my buffs to work around it. So while Necrons are going to die, Necrons are Necrons, so they're going to come back. Unless there's 28 cyclic ion blasters pointed in the face and they just go. which no doubt is going to happen.
Yeah, probably sooner or later, because Tau is actually growing in popularity, or like seeing some sort of resurgence or whatever you call that. But... yeah, fingers crossed that it goes, you know, your way, and and that it's a success with the Necrons. I would like to see the Necrons actually take the top, because I haven't seen them win anything major. I guess they are one of the top armies, but I don't think they are like the army securing the very first place. I don't recall.
They're a huge gatekeeper list, aren't they? Yeah. They're a huge gatekeeper army. Mm-hmm. They are good. They are great. They've got loads of tricks, but. If you turn up with a rock compared to the paper and scissors, it's game. It's what it's going to be.
Yeah.
But again, LGT with so many players, one of those Necrons, try and get through that net, try and push through to the top. Fair play to them. Go for it.
Yeah, absolutely. So fingers crossed that happens. So let's move on to the topic that you've prepared for today. So this is a topic of your choosing. You've decided to go with the top 7 tips or ways of preparing for a major or a super major. I think we should just jump into it, and maybe you could explain why did you feel that this topic is important, and why are we delving into that domain?
Okay, so it's extremely important. It's massive. Because if you're not ready to play, if you haven't got everything together, ready to go, then I think turning up with half an idea, half a mindset, half a plan, you know, you're not going there to win. But then, you know, not everybody does go for that reason. People, you know, a lot of people do go for the fun, they go for the experience. But obviously, that's not what we're talking about. We're going for the best way to maximize your fun, maximize your chances of winning. So, no, I think preparing and understanding and just getting ready for not specifically LGT, but all super majors, all majors. This is a pretty much 7-step plan that I follow to make sure I have the best time and I have the best results.
All right. So it's going to be interesting to hear your take on it, because last year when we were doing a similar series, prepping for the OGT, we had Innes Wilson on, and he gave some very sound pieces of advice. We discussed this in the episode earlier today as well, that there are people who took his advice to heart. And for example, one of the pieces of advice that he gave, this was like a very technical piece of advice, but he said, yeah, if you're going to a tournament and you want to survive, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 rounds of a tournament, bring a yoga mat with you to stand on, so that your legs don't fall off on day two. And when I heard that for the first time, I thought, that's unusual. Brilliant, but unusual. But then this year, when we went to the WTC, I saw plenty of people actually bringing those mats with them. And apparently many people listen to that piece of advice, and it is very handy. So yeah, if you have anything similarly practical, then I guess it will be very welcome, and maybe people will adopt your ideas as well. So let's listen to your top seven. Let's check what that is.
That's a lot of responsibility, because if people follow what I do at tournaments, we're gonna have a lot of people, a lot of hangovers.
So
number one, let's dive in at the beginning. So number one for me, I've titled it Ask the Wife, which encompasses a lot of different things. As in, you've got to make sure that you can actually go to the tournament. So life is big, life's important. There's a lot of things going on. People with families, people with wives, people with children. And not so much recently, but some quite, you know, a few years ago, 40K tickets were quite scarce. They were quite rare. So when you were trying to pick up a ticket, they might go on sale and you've got, you know, if you're lucky, a 10-15 minute window to grab this 60-70 pound ticket. And all of a sudden you might look in your diary and think, oh, 6 months, what's going on? And you've got a bit of a diary clash, maybe some family event, or, you know, you've got to take a child to some rugby game, or, you know, something turns up that means you can't go and do this. Or you may book 3 or 4 tournaments and they are one weekend after the another, which, you know, my wife's very understanding and working through past, but that has a big impact. So when you're getting ready for the Super Major, just make sure, or any 40K tournament, step number one, check that everything's in place, check your calendar, check that things are good, check that what you're planning on doing, you can actually go and do. Because it sounds really simple, but I'm not going to name any names. I know people that have booked multiple tournaments on the same weekend, and they've only realised on that weekend, I've seen the name on a tournament and gone, oh, brilliant, yeah, I can't wait to see him again. And then they're not turned up. And I've given a message, where are you? Oh, I forgot. I didn't realise it was this weekend.
Yeah.
And, you know, all of a sudden that money, that opportunity is all gone.
Yeah, people could think that this is like, you know, an obvious piece of advice.
Yeah, it is a little.
But actually, I not longer than a week ago, I had that conversation, like a water cooler conversation in my company, where, you know, I work for like a huge corporation, and in that company we have a system for booking absences, and like the system gives you the count of the days that are left that you can use up during the year. And a normal typical working adult in Poland has 26 days of paid leave that they can take. So all the people at the water cooler, we were discussing like holidays and how many days people have left and so on, and people told me that, you know, it's not even October, I don't have any days left, or it's like October and I need to use my voluntary days, so we get some time to do like voluntary work and then we can take time off. So I needed to use up my voluntary days to actually be able to go and do XYZ, something that I wanted to do. So yeah, adults don't plan properly to use up their resources. So yeah, be very careful about that. And the way you named it, so ask the wife or ask your wife, I understand that really well. And now, you know, 5 minutes of being human, I'm married. I have a 9-year-old son who has Asperger's and Tourette's and ADHD and some other things as well. And going to the LGT this year, for example, for me, it's taking 6 days away from home, because I'm traveling on Thursday and I'm coming back on Tuesday, which means that I'm leaving my wife with my son and our two dogs alone for 6 days. A month ago, we did the WTC, where it was pretty much the same, maybe not six, but 5 days. So I have, throughout the year, gathered like a humongous amount of wife points to actually be able to do that. And wife points is a currency that is extremely important that everyone needs to understand. If you're not married yet, write this down as a thing that they don't teach at school, that wife points is the most important currency in the world, not the dollar, not the euro, not the Bitcoin. It's the wife.
I like that.
So you need to accumulate quite a lot to be able to spend them and spend them wisely. So I couldn't agree more. Wife, ask the wife, ask the family, consult your, absences at work to see if you can do it. That's very spot on.
But there's also the financial implication. I mean, economic crisis, tricky times. You may be gagging for that next tournament. You may want to go and travel. You may want to go and do all these events and see all your friends. But again, you've got to budget, you've got to think, you've got to be extremely careful. So while obviously the title is Ask the Wife, it's more specific. It's more, what is your limitation? What is your boundaries that stop you from going to tournaments, work commitments, family, money, travel? How do all those things come together just to make sure you can go to these places? And I've been doing a lot more teams recently. And playing in a team compared to going to a singles event is massive. And the commitment and the responsibility you've got to turn up for your team is everything. And making sure that I'm available and I'm definitely going to be available for that time, even to the point of booking holidays around team events to make sure that I'm there for the people that I've committed to is everything. There was a team tournament that I wasn't able to go to. I snapped my ACL 2-3 days before. And I was in the hospital, and I was having my knee drained, and I was taking everything I could to try and get down to this tournament, because I knew, these guys were going to struggle. They're going to be a man down. Look, they got a fantastic replacement. But that weight weighing on me was horrible. Yeah, there's nothing I could do. But
Nobody wants to be replaced by someone else. And God forbid that someone does well. That has its own implications. But yeah, I totally get what you mean. And let's not even, lie to ourselves. If we go to a tournament and we like it, the appetite grows. Like, it's not like that's the last one that you're going to. If you go and you like it, and God forbid you win something or, like, do well, you want to go back. You want to go again. So, again, it all boils down to planning it wisely, planning the budget, planning the wife point budget, planning the time, et cetera, et cetera. Also, this point actually brought one thought to my mind when we started discussing it. I remember when my wife got pregnant. I actually thought that what this meant for me, that was 10 years ago, but what I thought that meant for me was that I'm not going to be able to play at all because the child is so absorbing and so on and so on. So I actually sold my army back then because I was convinced that the time for gaming is not going to be there. But don't despair. This is to our listeners. Don't despair. Good times will come eventually. Yeah. And although it sounds funny, if you are in that position now where you are you feel like you are blocked and you would like to go to the tournament, but you cannot, time helps. And, the child grows, your partner grows to understand that you have a passion and so on and so on. And sooner or later, you will be able to go. I've been there. Yeah. I've been convincing myself that it's not going to happen. But look, I went to the WTC. I'm going to the LGT for the second time. You can work it out. So yeah, it's gonna be okay.
It's all cyclical. It comes round. It comes round. Absolutely. There's always another tournament.
Yeah. So there will be occasions to go again. All right. So that's number one. Ask wife because your calendar gets filled up fast. What's number two on your list?
So number two for me is research. And it's first and foremost, I mean, we've already touched on the subject, when you were talking around people taking into the Necron blocks and getting out for the new data slate that's dropped. So it's research. I'm going to steal a line that I read on one of my group chats the other day. The two things that 40K players hate the most, change and things staying the same. Right? They hate them. When I read that line, I thought, oh, brilliant. I'm pinching that for today.
But that's brilliant. So go on. Explain.
Yeah. So, you know, we hate the change because all of a sudden something that we, you know, for example, with my Eldar list recently, it was a great list. I was loving it and mashing all these armies. Oh, I hated the change because this army that I was doing really well with had a great run with. And I need to pivot. I need to go into something else. So I hated that. But then I was also hating staying the same because I was playing so many games and I was going to lots of different tournaments. So to take the same list and kind of have the same outcome, I was playing against the same armies and I kind of knew before the game started how I was going to turn out. It was a bit monotonous. It was hard work. And, you know, that Eldar list against lots of armies, not all, but lots of armies, was so gross. It was so over the top and playing people who were just, even though I try and keep it lighthearted, I try and keep it fun at the table, I could just see my opponent not having the greatest time. You know, and that bothers me. I want my opponent to have a good time. So, yeah, things changing is a problem and a pain, and things staying the same is a problem and a pain because you've got to go with it all. So, yeah, 40K is changing. 40K is adapting. It always is. And that's something that Games Workshop's obviously put a lot of time and effort into over these last few years, last couple of editions. I remember playing back in 5th and 6th, and you were waiting ages for any kind of tweak or change, and it made the game stagnant. People left it. People moved on to other systems. But now that they're constantly updating and moving things along, it turns the game on its head every quarter, which is great because it keeps it fresh, it keeps it modern. But then what that means is preparing for your super majors and majors, you need to be on the ball. You can't just pull the army out the cupboard. You can't just hook up with your mates and like, come on, yeah, I've not been in a tournament in a few months. Let's have a go again. Because that landscape is totally different. You've got to research the current changes. You've got to research that current impact. You've got to listen to podcasts like yourselves. You've got to watch the YouTube videos. You've got to talk to your gaming groups and just see what they're doing and what they're finding out. Also, another one that always seems to catch a few people out, something I like to do a lot of, is research what stayed the same. So even though army's points have gone up and down and army rules have been tweaked and changed, there might be a hidden gem that you never bothered about before because it wasn't needed. There was, you know, you never had to bother worrying about taking out 16 crisis suits in a game. Mm. So this little enhancement or this bit of war gear or a certain weapon that just got that perfect profile to take out that unit. Well, does that exist in your list and you've just kind of put it to one side for a bit too long? You know, so reread that index and go back into your book and find what could be the current meta and, you know, adapt with how people are adapting. Something I do a lot of as well is spread your net wide. So I know people have their teams, they have their gaming groups. They may just have like that one friend who they meet up with for a game every week. And I find the more groups you go to, when talking with some of England players and different people, they talk about England meta compared to the Polish meta, compared to the US meta, and they use a lot of nationality metas, where from playing in Manchester and Liverpool and down in Nottingham, in Sheffield with Steel City lads, I find you get different, you know, little tiny metas growing and developing in certain little gaming groups. So kind of turning up to a 12, 16-man RTT with a list that I think could maybe win a major or a super major, and all of a sudden you've got Barry in the corner with this list that's just been destroying this local group, and you go, what's that? And all of a sudden you've got this problem that's never really turned up because, you know, this list is there. And all of a sudden you learn so much by it, or you just fingers crossed and hope you don't bump into it. So, yeah, try and go to different gaming groups, go to different areas, listen to different podcasts, watch different levels of YouTube videos, and you'll pick up, you know, what to do as much as what not to do sometimes in these different places. So, number two, just research. Get your own ideas, know your own army, go back into it and try and find what's there whilst learning from these people. Because, you know, podcast, internet is a fantastic thing. People are so open these days. You know, they love finding the combos. They love finding these armies. And they put them online as like this badge of honor. Look, oh, look what this I've created. Oh, look at this I've found. And all of a sudden I read it and go, oh, do you know what? That is going to absolutely rinse that block of Necron Warriors. That's a fantastic part. Oh, no, everyone knows about it now. Mm-hmm. So, and again, like you've already alluded to, how am I going to adapt and change to meet that new threat that's coming through? So without research and researching and researching, just going into everything, you're not giving yourself the best chance to do what you need to do.
Yeah. So I love what you said about those local metas. And playing in the local meta is a two-edged sword, I think. I mean, obviously, if that's the only thing you can do, then that's the only thing you can do. But sometimes it misleads people into thinking that, you know, that they are very good, and mm-hmm. then they leave their local meta, they go to like a wider audience or to a bigger tournament, like a countrywide tournament, and then they hit a brick wall because it turns out that somebody has already figured out what their list does, or, you know, played against it already or something. So that might be a trap, because you are stuck in that sort of echo chamber of your local meta. I, on the other hand, suffered from something else. Back in 7th edition, when my wife was pregnant and so on, I bought a Dark Eldar army, like a
hobby project.
No, not really. Not in 7th. Like, that was probably like the bottomest of tiers, if that's even a word.
It's not Eldar, though, so he's still good.
Yeah, but I had no idea what I was doing back then. I just liked the aesthetic of the army. And that was the time when, you know, unbelievable for some, but there haven't actually been, not many podcasts existed back then. One of the ones that I found completely by accident was Skardcast. And Skari was doing, like, maybe not early days of Skardcast, but still not as popular as today. And he was doing the series, like, going through the codex and explaining each of the lore and what each and every unit does, what's the best loadout for them, and so on and so on. And I listened to that like it was gospel. Like, you know, I treated him as an archon as he presents himself. And I thought that whatever he says is the actual truth. And, you know, I need to do just that. And I did. So the lists I've built were the lists according to the one true word from Skari. And then I went to a local tournament and I got punched in the face so badly that it turned out that whatever applies in America or in Canada has absolutely no application in Poland, for example, because the local meta is completely different. People bring other things, the meta, for example, is more shooty, while whatever Skari was talking about was aimed at a more melee-oriented meta, or the terrain was completely different. So whatever you listen to, take it with a pinch of salt, I guess. But today it's much different. Like, the advice that you get from people, especially that we now have one common system. We don't really have, like, the ITC over there doing their thing, and then WTC in Europe doing their thing. Everyone is... I mean, GW has done a great job of pretty much bringing everyone together with one common rule set. So that's something that is way better than it was back in 7th edition, for example. So I agree completely that doing research is extremely important. And one thing that I cannot stress enough is, if you haven't given TTS a try yet, so Tabletop Simulator, you absolutely should. Especially if, coming back to my previous point, you've used up all your wife points, or you cannot really travel to events because, I don't know, you have a newborn child or other obligations, and the only free time that you have is at 11 p.m. In the evening. TTS is the answer. Like, Joker, so my co-host, for example, has a newborn child, so younger than a month, and he already was able to play like 3 or 4 games since the child was born, only because he uses TTS. And this is how he researches stuff. This is how I research stuff, because I also don't get to travel that much for the reasons that I mentioned. Plus, the podcast consumes a lot of time. So my main way of actually getting acquainted with lists like, for example, Manny's list, is TTS, because one of my friends actually plays a very similar list to Manny's list from the Invitational. So all the accursed cultists with Torments and Abaddon and so on and so on. So I already know what this list does and how you know horrible it is on the table, because I've managed to play it on TTS. And the amount of like team leagues, singles leagues on TTS that are there, or just people who are willing to play a game at the craziest of times at 11 p.m., for example. It does happen that with Joker we start at 11 p.m. and we finish at 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. But if that's the only time when you can play, well, sometimes we make that sacrifice. So I strongly recommend this, because sometimes watching or listening to podcasts, I mean, it's fantastic, it's fun, but unless you actually put that to practice on either a virtual or real table, it's just theory, right? You need to sometimes experience it on, so quote unquote, your own skin. And TTS is a perfect tool for that. Even if at first it feels like clunky and, you know, uncomfortable, you really should try. There are so many tutorials on the internet, excuse me, how to set it up. There are so many resources in the Steam Workshop that you can download all the WTC maps or the UKTC maps. Any map that you can think of, or any layout that you can think of, it's been updated and it's out there. So everything is out there just waiting for you to pick up those virtual dice and try. And to me, this is the best way of researching what the game is about. I don't know,
Something
do
I've
you have
not
any?
tried, but
Oh,
I
okay.
definitely want to. My friend Mike does send me everything that I need to do, but that's my yeah, I think that's something I'm going to venture into. I have a
Yeah.
great thing.
I mean, Poland has, and I even invited some, you know, people from abroad to the Polish National TTS League that we have on Discord. So we have Sietl from Norway, from the team Norway, for example, playing in the Polish TTS League. And it's fantastic if you just want to see what other metas are doing. I know the Germans have Target Priority Discord, where they also have like a TTS League or something. So if you want to see what other local metas look like, that's a perfect tool to do it. So I will keep on singing praise to TTS, even though I know there is a ton of people who just dislike the aesthetic of TTS or dislike the clunkiness of it. But to those who sit at home, you know, breastfeeding a child, this is probably the only way that they can experience the game with that limited resource that is time. So I strongly, strongly, strongly recommend it. But yeah, I've gone on a tangent here a little bit. Back to you, and back to your next point.
So next point. So number one, we know we can go. Number two, we know what's going on. So we're ready to kind of start putting, as you said, the proof's in the pudding. So number three is prepare your army. You've got to start getting your army together. So even before you submitted your list, something's going on with Games Workshop and model access. So that, you know, your local gaming store, or even going online to buy your models, sometimes that can be a real pain these days. Especially as people know from the research, they know what's good. I mean, look at how Eldar numbers were rising in tournaments. The amount of Wraith Knights on the tables were crazy. So trying to get your hands on them was nearly impossible. So you might think, brilliant, yeah, I'm going to have 3D cannon Wraith Knights and just go and blow everything up. Well, where are you sourcing those from? Where are they coming from? Yeah, so, you know, even before you're thinking of building and painting and getting these lovely models all together, just make sure you actually can get your hands on them. And sometimes it is tricky, it's hard to, but then you might know people in your group or in the community that are very generous. You know, they're happy to lend and loan you within team, between friends, and start sharing these models, which is great. And you know, it's always risky lending your models out to somebody, but you know, you've got to trust them, they're gonna look after them and everything. So yeah, point three, you've got to prepare your army. It needs buying, it needs painting, it needs getting ready to look good on the tabletop, because having that cohesive army looking good is always better. Always take that time to try and push that boat out for the modeling aspect of the hobby, because you know, this hobby is not linear. It is not a case of rolling dice, which is why probably a lot of people don't like TTS. I can't comment, I've never played it, But it's a tactile game. You want to be rolling the dice, building up those models, then spending all that time and effort painting them to make them look great. And even if you're not a great painter, it's not about having a golden demon army every week, but just creating something, you know, off your own back in your own imagination, and then sat there. I remember dry brushing some of my first Eldar, you know, and just having paint everywhere, but learning that dry brushing technique and seeing those big splodgy edges on the armor, I was like, that's awesome. I'm well happy with that. Then as the years progress and you learn different painting techniques, and you know, Mohawk Miniatures, Jay, he was always great at showing me new ways of painting. And then, you know, you build up that skill set. So while it might not be like your initial ideas, and you might be just a competitive gamer, so you know, the game is your main side, or you might be a modeler, so you're into your conversions and everything. You know, just make sure that army's ready to go and give yourself the time to be able to do as good a job as you can do. But again, at the same time, if that's not your cup of tea, well, fine. don't worry about it. You enjoy the hobby for what you want to do. But I like to try and enjoy all aspects. And I seem to go through fits and spurts of it as well. I never seem to get bored of gaming. But sometimes I'll pick up a paintbrush and I think, right, this thing's doing. And then that's it. For the next 3 or 4 weeks, I am painting. And I'll just knock out so much stuff, and I'll revisit old techniques of ways of going around things and be like, brilliant, yeah, and, you know, up that side of it all. And then I'll put the paintbrushes down for some reason, and then may not go back to them for weeks and months, which is a shame. And it's just the building part. I don't think I've ever enjoyed the building part. I just think, give me a model, I'll make it look nice and get on the table and do something. But, you know, that's me. So, yeah, number three, prepare your army. Make sure you can get your hands on it. Make sure you can buy it these days. Never used to be a problem in the past, but it is now. So make sure you've got the models, and then put the time in to get those looking good and get them together.
What do you think about the concept that I've heard of in the past, that coming to a tournament with a prepared army is actually a way of showing respect to your enemy who has probably done the same?
I think it's an odd question now, because I think it depends what glasses are you looking through. So if you're looking through the glasses of somebody with a very competitive mindset, then they'll be approaching the game with, I want the best army that I can possibly get my hands on to win as many games as possible. So when they look at their army, they won't look at the three shades and edge highlighting with non-metallic metal coming from the side of the gun. They'll be looking at their army saying, this tournament pack says it must be three colours based. I have used Rattlecan Black, I've used Rattlecan White, and I've got some Tufts on the base, and, you know, I've done 100 red dots. So therefore, my army is three colours based, and I can play with it. So, and that's fine, because that's what they want to do, and they've met the expectation of the tournament.
Minimum criteria, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, whereas I would like to put a bit more effort in, usually. I've still got some Necrons to finish off, so don't hold me count to this on Friday. If my opponent turned up with the most beautiful army, you can guarantee I'm picking up their models if they allow me to. I'm commenting on them. I'm giving them praise for the effort, because as someone who is developing his paint, he likes to paint, I can appreciate and respect the effort they've gone to. You know, so that gets like a social thumbs up from me. But at the same time, if they haven't, well, you know, fine. Doesn't bother me one bit. It's just a case of you put an army together. You've come to a tournament to try and win as many games as you can, and yeah, fine, because that's why we're here.
So what do you do? Because you've mentioned at some at the very beginning that, you know, getting a hold of certain bits of the army, like, the, for example, the latest fad or the latest popular unit might be a difficulty due to logistic problems that GW is experiencing or something like that. So what do you do in a situation when you really want to put something on the table, put to test, or actually take to a tournament, but the model is not available or you cannot really get it? Is there, like, do you kit bash? Do you, you know, build something from the bits that you have? Or, yeah, what's the way to go for you?
First place I always go to is eBay. So as long as it's not stupid money, you can guarantee somebody out there is selling you something, or they realize that their treasured Wraith Knight is going for a bit more money than it might have done in the past. If I really, really want this, and I've got this like amazing idea that I think is going to do well, then I will pick up off eBay. Second point of call is my friends. My people I've met in 40K over the years. Like for this tournament, I take some Necrons off of a Brett down south. and he set me up, you know, like ghost arcs and parts, just to make sure Miami can come together. And then if those parts aren't in, like on my Necron Warriors, I used to run a list that was 169 Necron Warriors with some Royal Wardens, and we just used to run around all over the board doing crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. It was a really fun army, yeah, until Innis absolutely smashed me with it. But anyway, we'll not talk about that. Bad times.
That didn't happen.
Yeah, that never happened. Then, you know, I've got all these warriors with the Gauss Reapers on. But for this tournament, I would really like to have Gauss players so I could reach out and do a bit more shooting on different objectives. But to make sure the army matches what I've got, you know, I've changed it to Gauss Reapers. So sometimes you might really want something, and if you just can't get it anyway, then I'll go for maybe a sub-optimal option, which is not the best, not something I want to do. If I had the time, because it's been quite a quick turnaround from this data slate, especially getting the list in early for the Invitational, there wasn't that much time to make sure I've got things in place.
It was 13th of September?
Mm.
Something like that, I think.
Yeah, I think it was like a 6-7 day. It wasn't long.
Yeah, Zach specifically said, I want you to upload lists that you haven't had the time to play test, or something like that, which is a very mean thing to do, but oh well, what can you do? At least you're invited.
I just kept looking at my old Eldar army with a bit of a tear in my eye. Sorry, guys, you're not coming. You know, with time, the kit bashing or orders coming into different local stocks, it'll be there. But if you're really, really struggling, friends, borrow, beg, eBay, but that's paying a bit over the odds, which I'm not a fan of. And that's about it. It's, you know, it's coming back to that point number two. Point three, make sure you can actually get your hands on the models. Because if you submit that list and then you turn up with, a crisis suit with a plasma gun, a melter gun, and, you know, a shield rather than the three cyclics, and you get, you know, and you do well, you know, you might get let off those early rounds. And if you start going 4-0, 5-0, 6-0, and you start being on stream and things, it's not a good look. It's not going to go down well. And I've known tournaments, especially going playing the Games Workshop, they will take your models off. They will look at it and go, that's not WYSIWYG. That is not up to scratch. And again, if you've been, it doesn't matter. If I go to my local gaming place, if I go to my local RTT, your friends will let you off. Those little areas, those little tournaments, they won't mind too much. But you could get into yourself into a bit of a bad place, and it's not something I'd want to do.
Yeah. And if all that doesn't convince you, then, more and more events now are being streamed, for example, by Joe from War Games Live, like the LGT this year.
Mm-hmm.
And an army that is not really well painted and so on will probably not make it to the stream. So again, if the other argumentation didn't convince you, maybe this one will. If you want to be on camera, look good.
Turn up for the part.
Exactly. What's your next point?
So one, we know we can go. Number two, we've got all this information. Three, we start getting this army together. So by this point, you should have your models. You should be ready to go. You know everything that's working on. I've called this one reps. You've just got to practice. You've got to play and play and play as much as you possibly can. And from doing that, you'll see if that the maths on the Excel sheets, the numbers that you're running through your head, the combos which you think you're going to work, you know, those horrible 6-inch, 12-inch, 3-inch overs, will they actually play out on the game to be able to cover those both objectives? So while they look good on paper and they sound great, how do they actually translate into the game? Are you picking up that big monster, or is it just still picking off its saves? Are you picking up that 10-man squad, or is because they're just sneaking into that cover and you haven't got that full angle because your unit's now too big? Is it just making a mess? Because that finer tuning, that knowing exactly how to deploy your models in the right way, that is the difference between going 5-0, 4-1, knowing where you've got your problems and issues and trying to find a way to counter that mid-game. Again, yeah, that's the difference between going 4-1, 3-2. So just play. And again, like it's already said, play different people, play different friends, get onto as many different things as you can, because you'll learn every game. And also be very careful about who you play. As in, if you can pick up a game, do pick up a game. However, we all know that in your gaming groups, you have got those players that are of higher quality. You have got those players who understand the game to a different level and maybe have got more tournament experience. Try and play them as much as you can. Even though they'll put you to the test more, even though you might lose a couple of these practices and you're thinking, oh no, is this working or isn't it? You always learn more by losing. You can't get better without playing those better opponents. So while to prepare for your tournament, you must put the reps in with your army list. Play the quality people, play the quality armies, and, you know, give them the advantages. And if by turn 2-3, you know, your army's done the same as it always has done, you're like, well, you know, you've now gone first and you've now picked the mission, so this is not great for me and I don't want to be in this place, but I'm still winning. Well, re-rack it, do it again. And just see those uncomfortable, awkward parts. Right, so if I'd not placed my model perfectly into this building and left that little gap, can you put your model there now? And what would happen to this unit? Would I lose from this? Is it a big game changer, or can I still come back from it? You know, give yourself the tough scenarios. Don't play the game to win, play the game to learn. Yep. And approaching it in those two different angles, I think, makes all the difference for knowing how to get the most from your army.
Yeah, and remember that you, I mean, it's an obvious thing to say, but remember that you don't really have to play the full game to test everything. You can, if you do secure like a Friday evening with the lads without the wives and so on, and you do get to play, take a mate, play three rounds. After three rounds, more or less, you know already where the game is going. So stop after three rounds, redo it. Start again. This time you're not going first, or this time the other guy is going first. This time try fixed objectives instead of tactical objectives. Fixed objectives. Add a little bit of variation to what you're doing, but you don't have to play the full game every single time. So that's that. Also, I guess, read the rule packs of the tournaments that you're going to. And if you're doing reps, make sure that you are doing reps, understanding what you're in for. I made that grave mistake. I mentioned that in one of the previous episodes. I made a grave mistake because Joker enrolled us, like a team of five, to the down under 40k TTS league, teams TTS league. So we've gathered five people. I uploaded my list, the same list that I'm taking to the Invitational at the LGT, and that's Death Guard with two Land Raiders. Now, at the LGT, I looked at the terrain pack, I looked at the maps and so on. Two Land Raiders should fit. They, on most maps, they should do well. When we went to Joker went into the pairing meeting or pairing session with the other team from that TTS team tournament, and we have our little matrix in which we put like how well do we think we will fare against the other army and so on and so on. One thing that I forgot was that you also get to pick a table. Now, this tournament uses WTC terrain. At WTC, you have different kinds of like terrain layouts, from not very dense to very dense. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, against CSM, the list that my opponent has, which is a pretty shooty army, give me a dense table and I'll make it. I'll bring you points. What I didn't know is the dense table is extremely dense, to the point that a Land Raider cannot really go between terrain pieces. So what that meant for me was a very miserable showing, a very miserable game of two chunky Land Raiders looking miserably at the opponent, waving like hi and doing almost nothing. The only thing I could do was like tuck them deep into a ruin so that the whatever was inside could go out and try and charge. Obviously, this had a huge impact on how the game went. Obviously, it had a huge impact on the final score. I didn't bring the points that I promised the team that I would bring. So it made me feel quite miserable about how it all went. So yeah, so if you do reps, make sure that you understand what those reps should be going into. Read the tournament pack, read the rules, or the TO's ruling on certain things, because the way your rep or the way you practice and the way the game is actually meant to be played at the tournament could be three different things. And then understand the terrain layouts as well and adjust your army in a way that will fit those layouts. Like, I remember Jaime Paris in one of his podcasts or videos that he did. He plays on player place terrain very often in America. And he said that his Space Wolves army does so well because he knows that with player place terrain, he will be able to place the terrain in such a way that his jump back units will be able to jump from a piece of terrain to another piece of terrain unabated and, you know, without any threat of being shot by anyone else. So he builds the army knowing what terrain he's going into. And I guess this is what you also need to take into account when you're prepping for a tournament. Would you agree?
Massively so. Hugely. The terrain has a massive effect on your whole army composition, really. When you compare, I used to say, the Games Workshop terrain, which is just empty, till the LGT, till the light medium balls at WTC, which have caught me out a couple of times as well. They change everything. You have to be very knowledgeable of all aspects to, well, just, again, get the most out of the game, get the most out of the table, get the most out of your army. Mm-hmm. But yeah, know what you're going into. Otherwise, those reps don't really count for anything.
Yeah, there was a really interesting example of, I think, GSC units. I don't know, acolytes or excuse me, whichever unit can bring the bombs, the demolition charges. I think WTC says that if a unit resurrects, it cannot bring or it doesn't come back with the demolition charges on it. Mm-hmm. While I think the UKTC says that it comes back.
It can. Yeah.
Yes, with, which is a massive change. Or like if someone is used to the WTC rule set and comes to the UKTC unprepared, it will definitely catch a player by surprise. So again, we cannot stress this enough. Read the TO's rulings on certain things to fully understand what you're going in for.
Yeah, you'll find some interesting ones that the TO's rule on. Give him a read and go, that's an interesting take. There's been a few comments today on that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Should we move on to number four? Oh, sorry, number five, I think.
Yes, number five. We're getting through them. Mm-hmm. This one's quite a quick one. And so step one, we know we can go. Step two, what was that one again? It was the research, so we know what's going on. Step three, we're preparing his army, got it together. Step four, we're playing with it loads, so we know what's going on. So it's number five is the cycle's done. So number five is go back to step two. So you've played your games, you've understood everything. Don't now think you're ready. Do it again. Go back into that book, learn from your lessons. And I mean, you could say number five, you say reps. I'm sure number five comes after every single game. On that drive home, the amount of times I'll phone a good friend of mine, Gavin, 1 point Berry, and I started giving him post-tournament and post-game lowdowns and how I could have got a few more points. So how I did something silly, but, you know, good old Phantasm got me out of jail many, many different times. And, yeah, you know, tweak, adjust, and just go back to step two. So go back to your research and think how you could go through this and how you could try and get around it all. I've got a really good example of that when I lost to Josh Roberts in the Leeds GT. So I lost him in the final game, and it was quite a mirror matchup. He took the Avatar, and I had some more go wider Eldar parts. But it was basically two Wraith Knights versus two Wraith Knights, Incarn. He had the Avatar, I had some other stuff. Shadow Spectres all over the place. Mm-hmm. And then I lost the game. He went first, blew some Wraith Knights. I'm like, oh well, we tried. But I went home on that game, and all I thought about was how do I beat this list? How do I actually, if I come up against this again, knowing that other people see it, and Josh and I were at the same tournament a couple of weeks later, so I thought, I wonder if they'll take the same one. And I didn't want to copy his list and go for that mirror headbutt mashup, mm-hmm. but, you know, how do I beat him? I mean, he's a great player, very hard to beat, and makes hardly any mistakes on the tabletop. You know, fantastic guy as well. But, yeah, I just racked my brain for weeks and weeks to try and create the anti-Josh Roberts list, as it became known. I mean, a long story short, I never actually played him at this tournament. So I never got to try it out. But I did play Mike Duff, and he totally copied Josh's list. I think he had the Phoenix gem on a different Farseer compared to Josh. Mm-hmm. So he was like, oh, no, it's fine. It's my list, this. I mean, he's a great guy. He knows what he did. So I did end up playing him. Anyway, and the list worked. You know, the Wall Spiders did what they need to do. They just, like, trapped some things in Overwatch. And it was great to see. I thought, you know, that has worked, and I think we've got it. And for me, that's probably one of the most enjoyable things about 40K. Going back to something I said quite at the start of this conversation, of going to tournaments in the early days and just aiming to beat those players that we knew were top. And even if we finished 4-1 or 3-2, if we managed to get a scalp, so to speak, well, you know, we're really pleased. We've not won the event, but we know that we've kind of improved our game and we can play the top list, the top players, and we can be a bit innovative and creative around it all. But preparing for Super Major and Major, do keep tweaking, keep going back and adjusting. Make sure you learn from those lessons and just develop. Don't get a great looking army and think, right, this is me for the next few months. Keep tweaking, keep changing. And so, as we've said, the game is changing a lot now between updates and balanced data slates. So you have to for that. But even in that 3-4 month window, keep changing. If you don't change, you're going to get left behind massively.
Yeah. One thing that I observed in specifically in the Polish Death Guard part of the Polish Discord is what people started doing is after every tournament or even every game that people play, they started written battle reports or like battle summaries of the games that they have played. Okay. And it was started by, you know, the most like prominent players who just described what they did. And it was really interesting. Like, you know, it got a lot of attention. People were asking a lot of questions and so on. And it developed into essentially everyone who actually played the game started writing something about their experience. And it's fantastic because it's interesting. And people are, you'll find once you start doing something like this, that people are extremely knowledge hungry. Like, people want to listen to those, people want to read those, people want to, again, not many people have the time to play as many games, so even reading about your experience playing a game might help someone to develop. So one aspect of it is that that's interesting and useful to people. Second of all, it's an amazing community building tool, because again, people get to know you, people get to know your playstyle, people get to know, if you're a good storyteller, then they get to know you and your stories, which is fantastic as well, and it makes them crave more. And last but not least, you never know where the most interesting or useful feedback could come from. And very often those battle reports that people write in that Discord, they spark a discussion, they spark a feedback session where people say, well, have you thought about bringing this, or like, this didn't work for you, how about trying to do it this way or that way, or like, you've played tactical objectives, do you think playing fixed would help? So it's pretty much what you said earlier about you know, playing with a group of people in your local meta or something like that. You don't have to limit yourself to your local meta. It could be like a national meta on Discord, and just writing those reports, you'll see that in time you will improve, and the entire community will improve with you, because you are all learning from the same mistakes. So again, something that I strongly recommend is just share your experience with others and accept that others are sharing that experience, and just, you know, give feedback to one another. Brainstorm, almost.
Yeah, just from your feedback with the TTS and that, it's... You know, and I do keep a lot up here, and I think and I talk things over. But yeah, getting things down, writing and seeing it in paper, yeah, I can see how that would work out. And then having some of the mindsets, kind of get an idea into your mindset, which is always a very hard thing to do, in two mindsets together. Always hard. But yeah, then just seeing it, reading it through and commenting. Yeah, I could see that working well.
Yeah, totally. Right, so we've covered 5 points Fine. Already. Yeah. What's number six?
So number six, so 1 to 5, we're all ready to go. We've got his army, we're all ready to go. So number six is my favorite. It's accommodation, travel, and social side of the tournament. Mm. And yeah, I do. Everyone knows me in the 40k scene. Hopefully, yeah, we have a good time. we enjoy ourselves, and yeah, just meeting up with old friends and creating new ones. And say I've had a great game day one. You know, you can guarantee I'll be trying to drag that person out for a drink that night, and you know, come let me introduce you to these lads, and let's open up this 40k world to you. Because without number six, I think a lot of those other ones we're talking about, such as lending armies or increasing your meta range, that travel and social and staying with like-minded people is huge. And it's the main draw of the game. The friends I've made, the people I've come across, you know, Greg Mountford, who was like one of the top players when I was just getting into the game, is a name that's not around too much now. You know, it was best man at my wedding. And I met him through playing toys at Meadowall Shopping Centre in Sheffield. You know, and you think about the journey of that, it's crazy. And I guarantee I spend more time with the people I play 40k with at weekends, even though they live over in Liverpool or down in Southampton. You know, spend more time with those than I do my old rugby friends or friends from school. So once I know I'm going to a tournament and everything's in place and I want to go and do well, it's absolutely fundamental to make sure that I'm staying close to the venue, so I haven't got a nice easy get up in the morning because I might have a little headache or some other things going on, but also staying close to people, so I'll find out where my friends are staying, and you know, making sure that when the tournament finishes, we're in those similar kind of bars or restaurants so we can go for a meal, and yeah, and then organizing something, because what I've found through life is if you just turn up and hope something happens, or if you like, you know, you know, if I just hang around here and we might go out for a drink or we'll see what goes on after, it never does. So unless you're pushing and saying, all right, come on, let's meet up here. Should we go for a meal like in groups? Then 10 o'clock, let's get in that Wetherspoons down in town and we'll see what's going on. Mm-hmm. And just having a drink and you still talk about toys. You're still talking about the games. Everyone's got that war story. You know, my opponent, he rolled double one on his save and this last cannon blew him up. And, you know, those stories are much better when you've had five or six gins and you're just talking it in that social part. But then on the Sunday, you know, if you have managed to drag a few people out or a couple of 40K groups have got together, then you'll see those people walking around on the Sunday and you'll give them that little nod and you'll be like, oh, yeah, pal, and how's it going? And also what you did last night, you cheeky so-and-so. You know, you've got some shared stories, some shared camaraderie, so to speak. And then the next tournament, I'll guarantee at London, because everyone goes to London one, you'll see those people again. And instantly, you've got that recognition, and you might forget the name of something, but like, oh, yeah, I remember you from, oh, yeah, it was in Newcastle, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, you strike up that conversation again. And that, for me, is the enjoyable part of 40K. It's like-minded people all sharing their hobby. And yeah, we're trying to win. And yeah, we've got the maths, we've got the numbers. We've all spent a lot of money and time coming to this event and creating these armies together. So if you're not going to make the most out of enjoying it, and again, going out for drinks and getting into like different stories from the night out may not be everyone's cup of tea again. But whatever yours is, if it's you know, a cup of tea around a fireside, just going through the game, or if it's anything, just make sure you try and push that social side. Because I've no doubt you will enjoy the whole hobby 10 times more. And you'll be in more WhatsApp groups. You'll get in more invitations. You'll just experience a better 40K. So please don't underestimate when you're going to majors, super majors, how important the social side is. Because it's huge.
Yeah.
Which is for me anyway.
And we are all gossips. All 40k players love gossip, and to be perfectly honest, the best gossip comes from those social interactions at the event. If you're reading about something on the internet, you're probably reading it a day, two, three afterwards. So to the people who are at the event, it's already old news. So make sure that you head on to that tournament. You interact with people. You get into that social life of a 40k event. This goes mainly to people who are still hesitating whether they should appear at an event or not. Yes, you should. Yes, you should. Because there's no better way to network. There's no better way to show yourself. Like John here, for example, I know for a fact that he has the ambition to be on the English national team. There's no better way of showing yourself to the people that you aspire to play with than actually showing up at the event, chatting them up, and then maybe even playing some games with them. So yeah, that's just how the cookie crumbles, I guess. So very spot on. I agree 100%. What's the next point?
And then last but not least, so all the pieces are in place, the jigsaw's come together. This is more like maybe 1-2 days before. It's getting that positive mental attitude, prepare for war. Because that's a lot of things to put together. That's a lot of time, that's a lot of effort to put into a couple of days, you know, 5 games. You know, everything you've put in money-wise and maybe sacrificed if you're spending your wife points and you've banked all that now. You know, so you put a lot of resources, not just money, but time and love and effort. Just make sure that, you know, that positive mental attitude is absolutely spot on. Because like point six really points out, you know, I like to address point six more than any, that social contract, that social side of 40K. During the game, there is a huge social contract right in that singular game. And when you go for the tournament, even if your army looks terrible and you've just dry brushed it quick and you are just there to win and get those games and points up, you know, if that's your focus, you've still got that contract with the person opposite you. So even though your best laid plans, even though from all those reps and all your research and all the preparation of your army, if you then turn up to against an army that you've not lost to 4 or 5 times, then dice can tell stories, to quote another YouTube channel. The dice can go against you, or tactics can suddenly tweak, or somebody will suddenly change everything and think, you know, I can't win this, and they frontline everybody and you think, what are you doing? And the game suddenly twists on its head and you might be internally frustrated, you might be upset that the game's not gone to plan, but you know, don't let that ruin it. Don't be sullen, don't call the rules a load of rubbish, don't blame your dice, don't blame your opponent's dice, don't do anything, just go, you know, what can I learn from this? But also think about, you know, that as you've just said earlier, how are you presenting yourself to the 40K community? How are you presenting yourself to that person opposite the table? Because people gossip, people talk, and people love that bit of drama. So if you portray yourself in a really negative light, if you get mardy, if you start getting a little bit aggressive, if you're throwing your dice and the, you know, your literal toys out the pram, then you're not setting yourself up very well, and you won't, you know, when they see you running around the event, and if I bump into that person, I may have had one of those games against, which is very rare, very, very rare, you know, usually amazing games. But I guarantee I remember them extremely well, and I'll be not wanting to bump into them all. You know, if we played again, I'd be approaching the game with a different mindset of, right, well, how's this going to work? So just make sure that, yeah, even though you put every effort in, even though you've done everything you possibly could, it's hard to win a super major. It's really hard to go 7-0, 6-0, 5-0. It's not an easy thing. So when it doesn't happen, just enjoy it. Just get stuck in still. Make sure that person opposite you is having a good time with you. And if the dice are going crazy and you're like, this is absolutely ridiculous, just laugh it. Laugh it, laugh it up and say, come on, roll another 10 sixes, smash my teeth in. I can't get above a 2. And when you're out having that drink with mates at night, pull that person out with you and go, do you know what this guy did? Do you know this guy? And just have fun about the game. That'll big them up and they'll love it. You'll come across a great guy. Well, you know, just enjoy it. So step 7 is get that positive mental attitude. Enjoy what's going on. Don't just go to win best painted, because that's hard. Don't just go just to go 5-0, because that's hard. Enjoying it and getting stuck in ain't hard. That's totally in your control. So do that and you'll love it. Yeah, be spot on.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. I think being a good and enjoyable opponent takes a certain amount of adulting, so to say. So you need to understand what triggers you. You need to understand where, like, if you get angry at the table, or if you get, you know, triggered at the table, tilted, what causes that tilt? Like, I had that epiphany recently. Like, it's almost like this this sketch by Mitchell and Webb, Are We the Baddies? Where I was like, you know, I was I was playing a game with Joker, and at some point, like I couldn't kill his Magnus no matter what, like you know, and I was getting pissed at the rules that he has because I shot him once, he just ignored the damage. I shot him again, he failed to save, but then re-rolled it with a like I don't know, what do you call them? The
Cabal points.
Cabal points, thank you.
Yeah.
And then another save that he failed, he just re-rolled it with a command re-roll. I was like, this is f-ing ridiculous. Like, you know, three Land Raider shots or four Land Raider shots, and you just diminished all the damage that I did. It makes no sense. But then at the end of the game, I was like, wait a minute, I was the one causing Joker to feel bad for absolutely no reason. Am I the baddie? And you know, and and then I started thinking, like, where is this coming from? Why did I get so angry? It was just a test game. I was playing one of my best friends, and like, what the heck? And then it hit me that it came from my insecurity that I always feel when I play my friends, that you know, if I lose to them one, two, three, maybe four times in a row, they won't want to play with me again, because they'll just think, oh, you know, he's weak, I'm not going to play him. That's not the case. They explained that to me, like, dude, chill the fuck out. Like, we're going to play with you no matter what. You're okay. You're good. Like, we want to bounce ideas off you, blah blah blah. So what I'm trying to say is, sit down, look in the mirror, and think of what your insecurities are that might actually cause you to, you know, create a bad atmosphere at the table, and try to tackle this, try to eliminate this, and this will make you a better person, a better player, but it will also make the entire playing experience better to your opponent or your opponents, plural. So, yeah, an important takeaway, and I think, again, another point that is very spot on. Oh, we got through the seven.
Yeah, that was good. That was good. Enjoyable conversation around it all.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's not easy to like follow that checklist, but everyone should have a checklist, I guess. Or checklist for a checklist, as I think Kyle put it in one of the previous episodes. So I really appreciate the list that you've prepared. I really appreciate again that you came prepared to the show, and again, a massive thank you to you for actually thinking this through and coming with this amazing list. Which one of those points is the most challenging for you? Like, is there anything on that list that particularly you find difficult or that you need to work on the most?
The most. So I'm just going back through my notes. It's number one for me. That's the why. At
Yeah, I get that.
the minute, I am in quite a nice place work-wise and having time to put into 40K. But two young girls, wife, house, a developing business, you know, things are going to change. And just having that balance, because while 40K is my hobby, that is what it remains, a hobby. And while you can go down that rabbit hole deep and take your time and disappearing off painting and disappearing off the weekends on the bounce in a row, it's still a hobby. Don't let it overcome. Don't let it go too much. And sometimes you might be asking for some extra wife points or wanting just that one more weekend because you want to show what you can do. You want to be the best you can. You might just need to bite your tongue and go, no, I've been to three or four. I need to, you know, get that balance back. I need to get it right. So for me, it's number one.
Yeah, it's the same for me. Like, I it came to the point where I actually offered my wife a trip in return, so to say. So I was able to go to the WTC, do the coverage. 2 weeks later, she went on a holiday by a lake for 4 days with her friend, just so we could balance it out. Because again, wife points. So that's how we did it. I coined this term of trading time, where this is actually what we do. So I buy time by doing something, and then you know, and then sometimes she buys time by doing something else. So yeah, you need that in the relationship, I guess, for it to work, for you to be able to do the hobby. So yeah, I share the sentiment. John,
I'm just laughing because I'm exactly the same.
yeah. So before we finish, is there anything that you would want to plug or anything that you would like to draw our listeners' attention to before we say our farewells?
I'd like to mention a few people. So, you know, like those who helped me with the research and prepare the armies, like Gabby in One Point Perry and Rattlecan Rob. We've got Rob Kimpton as well, Mark of Steel City. You know, those guys don't half help me out a lot. We've got Michael and Pete Duff over in Liverpool. I play a lot in their team, so the information I get from them. Same with Adam Lane. You know, like with the Matrixers and learning how teams work. You know, just these people who really pull things together. If you haven't heard of Army Reactor, I would highly recommend going and checking that out as a alternative list building website, as a list building app. And Prestige Wargaming, it's a business I'm starting. Don't bother Googling it, but just keep an ear out in the coming months. That will hopefully be another venue to go and play games, buy your products at. So yeah, thank you for the opportunity to plug a few things and a few people.
Absolutely. And John, it's been an absolute pleasure for me to have you. Again, I think that the list is brilliant, and I think that everyone should have a checklist like that and basically go through it before every single event to have a great time. So thank you for bringing that. Thank you for being an amazing guest on the podcast. And I guess I'll see you at the event.
Yeah, I'll come over and say hello. Been a pleasure.
Absolutely. All right. And to everyone else, everyone listening, please follow us. Please press the subscribe button, the alert button to stay up to date with our live entries at the event. Because if you haven't figured out already, Contact Lost is going to the LGT to do live coverage in between the rounds. The rounds are going to be streamed by Wargames Live, and then the end of the round, the beginning of the round, and the like end of day summary studio with all the highlights is going to be done by us. We will do tons of interviews with our guests, so players who have won games, lost games. We're going to dissect this and analyze why, what happened, have they used the wrong tactics, have, you know, whatever happened. We are going to unearth it for you live. So press that alert button to get the latest updates on what is going on. And do consider becoming our patron. So we have a patron page with different tiers, with different benefits. It will help us greatly to grow. And if you want to see the podcast grow and improve, then that is one of the ways how you can help. So I strongly recommend it as well. With that, I would like to invite you to the next episode tomorrow, which is going to be Joker interviewing Clément Tourmont, if I'm pronouncing that right. They are going to talk about Eldar and how to tackle them in the meta, because that is still the boogeyman. So Clément is going to explain to us how to actually beat them, and if it's at all possible. So that's happening tomorrow. And if time allows, on Wednesday, we might have one more episode. I'm not promising that, because I don't know if that's going to happen, if I can get our guests to actually come. Because there are clashes of schedule and so on. But we will do our best to keep you entertained. With that, I thank you for watching. And until next time. Bye-bye.